Welcome to the Age of Fission radio show with your host, Lonnie Clark. We stand together and accept we now live in a world transformed by the nuclear industry. We expose and confront the intentional neglect and disregard for life on our planet by atomic energy. Consider social engineering programs who view our bodies, minds, and souls as assets on a balance sheet. We discuss vital current issues, interview activists, and engage our audience in an effort to allow all voices to be heard. We encourage our listeners to reclaim their power and their courage to take action to save our planet from the ravages of greed and indifference. Every voice matters. Our actions matter. We remind our listeners that happiness is resistance. Love is greater than fear. Good evening. This is your host, Lonnie Clark, with the Age of Fission radio show. I want to thank you for joining us, and I want to thank all of our listeners and subscribers to our channel and to our podcast, and I want to thank you for sharing the information. And I encourage you to share this video or the podcast wherever you hear us. Please do let people know about this information because it is kind of the untold secret that is affecting everybody on the planet. So I want to really thank you for joining us and caring enough about our planet to listen to this. These are harsh conversations, I get it. They're not the easiest. And we rattle off a lot of stuff on this channel that a lot of people have hearing for the first time. I tend to forget because I've been covering this now probably, I think it's been 6 years, going on 6 years. The Fukushima disaster happened 3/11/11, and I didn't really understand until 5/12/2012. It was May 5th, 2012 when I really first heard about it. Today I have with us a guest that I asked to be on. It's kind of a spontaneous interview. It's not planned. I just said, hey, you want to do an interview with me? And he said, yes. So I'm really delighted to have with us Mr. Sean McGee. He is a contributor to nuclear-news.net. And anyone who is interested in understanding about radioactivity and the health effects and just exactly what's going on, this is like one of the best sites where you can get comprehensive information about nuclear in all of its aspects. You will read about nuclear weapons, nuclear power plants, nuclear disasters, nuclear victims, and they also cover other. There's sometimes they waver off of that, but this is almost entirely where it goes. So I really encourage all of you to go there, but Mr. Sean McGee is with us, and I really appreciate you joining us, Sean.
It's my pleasure, and it's been a little while since we last had a little talk, and quite a lot's happened since. Where do you want to go with this?
Well, oh my gosh, you know what my number one thing is about the nuclear denial, and I think it always goes back to, you know, we were just talking before we started recording. We were talking about his current website because I am researching. I just found out. Now I've been doing this, and this is the first I heard about it. I'm researching about a toxic. They call them legacy sites, and they're all Manhattan Project nuclear waste sites. That's what they call them. Whenever there's a nuclear dump site, whenever they're finished with their nuclear bomb making or processing or any of that, when they're finished with it, they just call them a legacy site. So whenever you hear the term toxic legacy, it usually means radioactivity in the United States. So there's one called Treasure Island off of San Francisco. It was off of San Francisco Bay in 1942. The U.S. has basically replanted 1,800 low-income people there, and they are extremely sick. And I was thinking about the denial of the nuclear. It's my ongoing theme here is the nuclear denial. You and I were talking about it, and I encourage people to go to this. Scroll down to the bottom of the page, and you will see something on the Chernobyl disaster. So, Sean, why don't you talk to these people and tell them what you guys are posting here? And it's kind of stunning what's happened to the people in Chernobyl.
Well, I mean, they had the HBO sort of Chernobyl series recently that's been widely discussed, and it was a dramatized kind of version of what happened in Chernobyl. It was kind of technically right in some respects, and you know, in how the actual accident happened, and it looks like it was done based in Europe. There's a lot of European actors involved with it. It's certainly a little bit of a surprise about how much detail they allowed.
That me too. That shocked me that they actually allowed. Yeah. But you know why? I figured they did because it's Russia. So they let all the bad stuff come out because it's Russia.
Well, to be honest with you, you know, there was a lot of Russians there that were doing good stuff as well,
right.
You know, so it was quite balanced. It was dramatized. I mean, I did actually engage with the guy that actually wrote the thing, or directed it, I should say. And I dropped an update with him, where at the end, where they've got the people of Pripyat, the town that was nearby,
yeah.
They get all bussed away eventually, they get taken away, of course that's it. You don't really hear much. All you see is a couple of snippets of them in these housing somewhere. And where that somewhere was, where they were taken, like where the girl was taken, and you see her afterwards, and she loses her kid, and this, that, and the other. That is actually Kiev, which is in Ukraine.
Wow.
And they don't, I don't think obviously they wanted to talk too much about Ukraine at the moment because of all the politics the geopolitics and that. But however, they were taken to Ukraine. And as they get shipped away, they then get moved to this area around Kiev, which is the sort of main city in Ukraine. And what happened was, is when I was talking to this guy, I said, "Well, have you actually followed up what happened to all those people?" And so what I did, I dropped, I went to a meeting in 2013 where a Ukrainian NGO called Zamyeki, I should say, was doing a talk, and it was a Ms. Tamara Krasitskava, excuse me for butchering the name. And she was in charge of this NGO, and she was working with these 44,000 people that were evacuated there. And during the course of the meeting, basically they turned around and they were she was telling us all the sort of various stories about the health issues and various things that were going on with these people. And in the meeting, she actually quoted that only 40% of the evacuees that moved to Kiev after the disaster were alive in 2013. She basically said, you know, in terms of numbers, she said there was 44,000 people evacuated to Kiev, you know, approximately, but only 19,000 approximately were left alive, and that very few of them had made it much past 40 years old.
Wow.
So, you know, at the end of the day, that's, you know, what the, I mean, these statistics are not widely known, but what the nuclear industry has been saying, you know, who has been in the last number of years being fronted by Professor Geraldine Thomas. You see her on television, you see her at the you see her all over the place on the papers, and you know, she gets the BBC, you know, she gets, and she's been in Fukushima, and so on and so on. And what her response is that, well, a lot of these people, they were smoking cigarettes and, you know, and it was all the stress and everything, you know.
Yeah, the usual. Honestly, this is the thing that sets me off more than anything. To me, it's the only thing that I think we ought to be talking about in the nuclear, stopping the nuclear industry. Because the complete blanket denial of the harm to human health is really grotesque and medieval. You know what I mean? It's you know, we think about in history about the Crusades and the horrible things that used to happen 700-800 years ago. That's what this is on this scale, Sean. That's what I think. Yep.
I mean, most of my research has actually been digging into that. And we can actually have a chat about that later, actually. You know, at the end of the day, it's you know, it's like saying, well, you know, how do we know cigarettes cause cancer?
Because they did
and
studies.
At the end of the day, there's no, you know, the way they discovered it was by statistics. And the way that the nuclear industry sort of hides it is by using statistics.
Yeah, but they're not honest in their statistics, Sean. They don't test. They, like all the monitors, I was talking to Thomas Ackerman this morning, all the monitors in Canada are turned off. All of them. There are no, they no longer go on. The government keeps track, but the public monitors for levels of radioactivity flying across Canada. That's why if you look at the NETC.com where you can check the radioactivity across the, you know, the globe, basically, Canada's completely empty because they don't keep track.
Well, I mean, you know, it's, yeah, I mean the manipulation of data, statistics, and all this is just a common thing they do. But you know, to be quite honest with you, you know, we've now got to the point where we've been able to get hold of more and more statistics, and the more statistics we get, basically, and also the scientists themselves, you know, nuclear scientists are starting to step forward. You know, we also have Professor Chris Busby and many others like him that have been sort of making this point for a while. And there's others there as well that don't get a voice.
That's
like
true.
Professor Keith Bavistock, you know, who basically was the one who discovered the link between, and this is statistic again, but the link between thyroid cancer and iodine-131. The nuclear industry itself was denying that and denying it and denying it. And Keith Bavistock was actually in the World Health Organization, in the radiological department they had at the time. And he basically did crunch the numbers and said, right, now there is a statistical connection here. And he'd put his figures down, and the nuclear industry had come back and say, well, you can't count that one, you know, thyroid cancer runs in the family, and that one there could have been caused by alcohol, and that one could have been caused by cigarettes.
Right.
So they'll come back, and then he reduces his numbers. But even though he reduced his numbers, he could still say, well, look, there's still too many kids that got thyroid cancer. And so basically, he was the one that made... But what happened to him? I think it was 2001. They closed the Radiological Protection Board down in the World Health Organization and moved it over under the auspices of the IAEA, International Atomic Energy Agency, who promote nuclear energy. So they then had the control with the ICRP and the UNSCEARs to actually control the actual data themselves and have it hidden, have it under the table, and not have this upstart professor, you know, Keith Bavistock, who actually I will talk about again later, because he basically turned around. He was moved. He was made, you know, jobless. Yeah, but he moved to Finland, and he's still working up in Finland today, and he hasn't been stopping his research.
Good.
And the Finnish, who have a nuclear industry, I mean, when I go on to the Finnish websites, they have all their data, all their reports,
yeah,
in English as well as Finnish, and they have it all up there.
and you can find out that, for instance, nuclear power stations create NO2, which is a worse greenhouse gas than CO2.
Really?
Now, the industry doesn't tell you that. But if you go onto the Finnish website, you know, this is the Finnish nuclear industry, you know, which is a gold standard in the nuclear industry in my books. And they would turn around and they would say, well, we tried to put, you know, we were going to put a filter on top to stop the NO2 getting out into the atmosphere. But what happens is, instead of NO2, it just becomes NO something else. And it doesn't, you know, there's no point putting the filter there, basically, because all they can do is slightly change it, and it doesn't make any difference. And they end up with a radioactive filter they've got to, you know,
deal
with.
So do you follow Greta Thunberg on Twitter?
Yeah, no, of course.
Have you made this argument to her and sent her any documentation on this and said, look, you want to fight the greenhouse gases? You've got to get behind.
She's against nuclear anyway, and the argument for nuclear really is a dead duck in terms of using it for climate change or anything, because it's just much quicker and easier to pull up. Well, they're trying to, yeah, but they're not managing it.
Well, look what they just gave to Saudi Arabia.
They actually sell the third world nations. What it is, it's like a Ponzi scheme, the nuclear industry.
That's right.
If they can say, right, we're going to sell a reactor to South Africa, what will happen is money will be generated, reports will be done, you know, money will flow. And because of that, then they can go to investors and say, look, we've got this deal. And so they can get some money out of investors. They can get some money out of the taxpayer. And then of course it fails. Like just recently, South Africa said, well, actually, we don't want your nuclear reactor, Mr. Russia. And that's the end of that. And that's happening in the Western world, in Russia, and even in China. They can't sell these things. Because, you know, at the end of the day, they're just not cost effective, and they're just, you know, just on that alone.
They're just such a, I mean, the thing is, they've created such a mess. Like, if they turned off every nuclear generating everything and we went completely no nukes 100%, we have millions of years of issues to deal with here. Physical effects that we can't even imagine for generations to come because of it.
Me and you probably have a slightly different view, you know. I don't know if we do actually, but you know, I would say that there are other toxins like lead and various other toxins that are in. I mean, there's toxins that all industry uses, and you know. But from a perspective, you know, we need to stop the nuclear reactors, you know, because at the end of the day, they're just creating more and more, and you know, they're polluting more and more, and you know, and most of the worst of the sort of pollution comes in the local area or downriver or downwind, and you know, and that what you're saying about it, you know, like for cesium, it's 600 years that's going to be, you know, there. If you're allowing uranium particles to get out, well, that's a much,
well,
as you're saying, you're going,
look at plutonium. Plutonium is everywhere. Plutonium is everywhere. They bombed the daylights out of us with plutonium in the World War II. Half-life is 24,500 years, so it's not going anywhere.
I mean, it does change, like plutonium will change into other types. But then again, you've got americium that's actually worse than plutonium.
Exactly. The effects on the human body doesn't really decrease. If there's plutonium out there, this is the thing. As I began to really grasp this, like when I read John Goffman's book, Poison Power, and I read that inside their standard where they say use a male 28-year-old and talk about external exposure only, because all of these, quote, safety effects, none of them have anything to do with internal exposure. It's all external. And but when I realized, like, inside that standard of creating those standards, the United States government, the NRC, on their website says that for every rem of radiation in the air per million people, they know they will get 32,000 cancers a year and 225 birth defects every year. This is why we have an explosion of birth defects and cancer. And it's right there. And to be honest, Sean, this is why I keep doing the podcast. It's like emotional therapy. You know what I mean? Really, this is, it's incomprehensible. I guess what I call it is the, you know, it's even beyond apathy.
Are you actually hearing that drilling noise?
Not much. Why, is there some drilling going on?
Yeah, there's building work going on downstairs.
Downstairs. And where are you now? You're in Ireland?
You're
in Ireland.
So, alright, I'm going to stop. You might have to do a bit of editing here.
No, that's alright. We can keep going. I don't mind. I mean, this is actually an interesting conversation. It's an impromptu interview. We sort of let people know that ahead of time, so I think we're good. I actually wanted to ask you what you thought about that. Did you guys see that little 36, or it's a minute and a half YouTube video with the Union of Concerned Scientists going to Washington, D.C. and asking people, do you know how many nuclear weapons that there are in the world?
All right, how did that go? I didn't see it.
It was really hilarious. I guess part of that, then they asked the same people, like, do you know how many weapons the United States has, and do you know how much they cost? So people, it varied. Some people said they had like 6,000 weapons. Some people said we had 100. There's actually 14,000 nuclear weapons in the world. Yeah. And the United States has 6 of them. Russia has 6. And I think they said that
6,000.
Yeah, 6,000. Yes. And we are the United States is busy upgrading their nuclear weapons as we speak. So that means, guess how much they cost? It's something like $153 million an hour.
Oh, at least, yeah.
A ridiculous amount of money. It's a very short, it's called Union of Concerned Scientists. They have their own YouTube channel. And they don't make very many YouTube videos. I subscribe to them. And it's very clever. He just goes in and asks people, and it's a really great way for people to understand how much we discount it. Like, we have literally been trained to completely ignore the nuclear industry.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, to be honest, it's in 2005, funnily enough, 4 years after they managed to wink Professor Bavistock out of the World Health Organization and keep him away from, you know, causing any trouble. About 5 years later, they started a big PR campaign to get, you know, nuclear to rise up again. But I mean, to be honest, I personally think it's failed now. I think nuclear is a dead duck. For me now, it's my main priority is the victims of, you know, the downwinders in America, the people that
you mean
have been,
all of us, like all of us, we're all. I mean, this is the reality.
I would say there are people like I had two friends that were living in Utah.
Yeah.
A friend that was living in Utah, he was in London with me, and we were both in doing CND sort of Greenpeace stuff and what have you. And
Blanche go? Was that Kevin Blanche go out and meet you?
No.
A different guy.
This was he was like top in CND and Greenpeace. We did the sort of Rainbow Warrior crap. And so basically he was, when you pick his phone up, you could hear the clicks. It was good old days. This is 40 years ago. It was like clickety clickety click. So, you couldn't make a call without it being listened to. It's quite funny.
Well, you can't make a call now for that of being listened to. So,
well, I mean, him and his brother were downwinders. They were in Utah.
Yeah.
What happened was is that they when they were born, because the bombs happened, and then he was born, and but him and his brother both had internal organs that hadn't formed properly. It's a bit like all the babies that you see in Fallujah, that are born even today.
Yeah.
Stillbirths and they have quite serious
birth defects. Yeah, I mean the infants in utero are that's what Dr. Linus Pauling proved. Infants in utero are the most affected. I mean, it is really true.
Both him and his brother had these internal organs that were slightly malformed, but one of the big things, his biggest problem, I think it was, he had a lot of what do you call it when you're allergies, that's it. He had a lot of allergies.
Yeah.
Weakened immune system, basically.
Yeah.
So that, and I was having a pint of beer in a pub with him the day after when we found out about Chernobyl. We found out about it in the morning, and I looked at him. I knocked on his door because he was next door, and I said, "Look, we're going down the pub because it's going to rain later, and I don't want to be out in the rain."
This was 1986. You were doing anti-nuclear and Greenpeace stuff in 1986.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, but that was before. That was kind of before. And we're sort of Greenpeace-y kind of environmental things. But bottom line was he was actually because he'd been a downwind already, and then we'd worked out that it was going to rain, and we knew that we didn't want to be out in the rain, so we went to this pub that was just across the road, and we were playing pool and drinking beer and just looking outside as the rain came down, which was definitely being radioactive at that point. And it was that morning we were told that, this had all happened, and it took a couple of days from it, from where it went from Norway to, it was probably about 2 or 3 days after, that bit where they said, the West in HBO, they said, the West has found out. It was probably about 3 days after that where the Finnish and the Swedish had reported it, the Germans. But it swung out into sea, came over Ireland, and then it came back towards us. And it did rain. When it came in, it did rain. So we were sitting. We drank until it stopped raining, and then we staggered back. we were playing pool and getting drunk, and that was my claim to fame.
Wow.
There was another thing at the time as well. I won't talk about that, but there was a more profound experience I had, as a young lad, where basically that I had a girlfriend who was in Norway, and so I was really worried about her, but apparently what happened was she was right on the west coast of Norway.
Hmm.
The clouds went over the top of the mountains,
right?
But it already let all the rain had come down up
right.
in the mountains.
You probably got more radioactivity than she did at the time.
Yeah, totally.
So, this goes again back to the underlying core issue. Like, how is it that we let the International Atomic Energy Agency off the hook about the nuclear
denial? Well, it was
just
PR. It was fantastic PR. And there were so many other things going on then. There was the fall of the Soviet Union. There was just some mad
yeah,
stuff
but
going
what
on.
About now? Why is not...
Rainforest was the big thing at the time for me. Because they were cutting the rainforest down, and I was standing outside. But what was that? I can't remember the name of the film about the rainforest, with the... anyway, there was a film going around which was about a tribe in the rainforest, and they were trying to, you know, and what happened, and people went to see it. And when they came out of the cinemas, you know, it was Friends of the Earth and me. We'd have a desk and we'd show them how all the rainforest was being cut down. And that was a big thing for us. So there was so much activism and stuff going on that the nuclear thing just got pushed behind. And of course, as we know now, that there was a lot of corporate capture. There was, as I said, you know, the nurses that were working in Chernobyl were told not to talk about the health effects they were seeing. So there wasn't the internet, so you weren't getting Ukrainians saying, "Oh, look what's happened in this, and here's a Geiger counter reading." So when that happened in Fukushima, we the first thing I did was go straight on to, well, it was any news, wasn't it? It was the only place that you could find out about it. And we were all discussing it there. And then, of course, from there, I went off to blogs, and then others started their own blogs up and, you know, what have you. We've been sharing all this information constantly. And initially, when we started sharing it, the people like Zero Hedge, you know, the financial blogs were mm-hmm. taking it up. We were giving them the information. We were translating from Japanese to English and then getting it out there. The way the internet works, they would search the internet, all these bots, these computer programs, they gain all the information on various things and then feed it back into the stock exchange and to the hedge funds. And they would look at all the news and they would decide, well, is there more good news about about nuclear industry or bad news? And all they would get is Fukushima, 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 you know, cancers and, you know.
That's what you were talking about. This is what you meant when a few years ago, you and I were talking. I've known you for several years now. And
that's right.
A while back, you were talking to me about the importance of constantly putting things out because it hit the algorithms. Or I got very confused because you said it affected the stock markets. And I was like, how could you reposting? So this is how it works, is it's because they take the information from the internet and they feed it into the stock market computers and they test the algorithms and they do, the computers calculate the risk of investing or not investing based on what the news says. And it's not anybody like sitting in a think tank doing it. It's more about the activity that they're seeing in the, this is how they get away with the lies, because there's more of them.
Let's put it this way, because you mentioned Greta Thunberg. Now she's gone viral. And you've got all these old guys going, "Oh, well, you know, she's just a young whippersnapper. What does she know? And do, and you know, what can she do?" But what she did was an amazing media campaign. And they would love to shut her down. And they are, actually. I'll get onto that if you want. But what's happened is that now you're getting lots of companies divesting, from fossil fuels. Because all their algorithms are going, "Oh, no, that's not a good investment," right. And it's the same thing we did with the Fukushima thing. And we killed the nuclear industry, basically, because of it.
Well, don't but you if think you know, they killed you know themselves? Now, it's kind of like Donald Trump. Like, okay, so the Republicans aren't going to vote for witnesses, he's impeaching himself. You know what I mean? The nuclear industry is killing itself. Fukushima is like the last straw. It's still a freaking... In fact, every single meltdown and disaster is still a disaster. Three Mile Island is still not taken care of.
The way Donald Trump uses his Twitter is to cover that kind of stuff. He like for instance, in India, in Mumbai, the police stopped a motorcycle. On the back of the motorcycle was 20 kilos of highly enriched uranium. Now, you could split that in half, bang it together, and it causes a low kiloton yield explosion. Okay? Now, when that happened, right, it was reported in India all over the place. And I couldn't find, I only found one report on any Western
when
news.
Was this?
That was the first year. Oh, no, it would have been the first year that he was president.
Oh, my God.
So was that 2016, I suppose?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I did some posts on it, but they got no traction. Mainly because when that happened, and I reckon he was told by the CIA or whoever, the Pentagon or whatever it was, to do those tweets about North Korea. That was his North Korea, first North Korea binge. And that was to cover. So that if you did any searching on the internet and you typed in nuclear, you'd have just found North Korea's stories, you know, thousands.
Right. It's kind of like this thing with that I'm finding with Treasure Island. This report that was done by Reuters was done in 2018 or 19. And I'm like, where was I? Like, I read Reuters. It never came up. I actually searched their website. This really blew me away. January 31st, 2019, it's from a year ago about San Francisco. So it's interesting.
Yeah, but I mean, they can manipulate, they can swamp.
That's right.
And what I did, I just kept for about 1 or 2 months afterwards I did it. But by that point, you know, we talked about censorship, and so I'd post something on WordPress, and then it would, you know, you couldn't find it on Google.
Right.
And then, of course, our blog is basically, it's gone from getting 600 hits from Google a day to 40, you know, 50 or 60 maybe. You know, we're only getting like 10% if we're lucky. And in fact, Bing gives us sometimes more than Google does,
right,
which anybody out there. So, and that was a couple of steps. It was 2017. It dropped, you know, it dropped down to about, we were only getting, you know, I think it was like 40% of what we were getting. Well, today it's 10%. And that happened to Democracy Now, World Socialist Website, anything that was left leaning or activist just disappeared off the Google search near enough. And it's, and like YouTube as well is doing the same thing. I was always getting, I don't know, I was getting like maybe 100 hits a day, you know, in all the videos I did. Well, it's down to 5. So that just explains how, so what, you know, I've had to actually adjust and to market, you actually now have to do what I did with this latest study, which shows that microparticles that can go through the skin into your blood and, in, you know, lodge in your brain, go through the blood-brain barrier and lodge into, there's all these studies out there. Nobody knows about them. And we were talking about taking radiation internally. Well, you know, these radioactive particles are also toxic.
Of the radioactive particles just go right through your skin, like a laser. Well, it's basically kind of like a laser the way they go through
The study with that was done by King's College London, and it took them 5 years to peer review it. Which means basically that they knew about this in 2011, 2012 when Fukushima happened, right? But it was delayed for 5 years. And then when it came out, I don't think many people heard about it. And it was what it was to do. It wasn't to do with radiation. It was to do with toxic pollutant particles, right? And which were always ignored. If it was under a certain size, they only presumed that you would breathe it in and it would breathe out, or it would just go through your system. They didn't, you know, when they did the study, they realized that, well, actually it would get in, you know, it actually would get into your system more, and they're actually much more dangerous. But up until about, I think it must have been 2013, 2014, the general advice was that if they were microparticles or nanoparticles, which are the same thing, and then, you know, a certain size or smaller, you know, like a virus in size particle, that they wouldn't have any effect. But in fact, they do. And this study was held up for 5 years before it was peer-reviewed. And when it came out, it wasn't really, you know, they, there wasn't any real big sort of thing made about it. So, and then another study is done, which is looking at, so you've got the microparticle bit, but then there was like studies that were sort of looking at microplastic particles that are getting into the brains of fish, you know.
So, well, interestingly enough, there's reports about the microplastics, but they don't talk about the microparticles of radioactivity. That's my point here, is there is such nuclear denial. Like, it is incomprehensible how we are not even allowed to entertain the idea that nuclear harms us. We always have, the first thing people say, well, it could be the cigarettes, it could be their history, their genetics. It's like my sister, she's like, well, Mommy, you know, we have thyroid cancer in our family. I'm like, really, who had thyroid cancer? Well, so-and-so. Well, when did they get their thyroid cancer? They got it in 1967 after being exposed to nuclear bombs. So we don't have a history of thyroid cancer.
Yeah. I mean, the bottom line is that with these studies, it's like, you know, I did this article, and so I actually mentioned about this toxic air pollution particles found in human brains. It was done in The Guardian in 2016.
Yeah.
And so 2011 was when they knew about it. It took 5 years to peer review. King's College London was involved with it. And so that's that. So, okay, oh, no, air pollution particle, nobody's going to really think too much about that. But they were saying it has links to Alzheimer's disease. Now, they were talking about car pollution there, right? That was their general thing. But the fact of the matter is that the latest study from Fukushima is that there's cesium rich microparticles were it's the larger amount of pollution that was released, you know, the sort of thing that Chris Busby was measuring, where he didn't actually notice it because they're microparticles, but you know, when he was measuring the lead in those air filters in Tokyo, mm-hmm. I don't know if you still video with that,
yeah,
but if he had the right equipment, he would have probably seen cesium rich microparticles. You know, and the bottom line is they brought this study out, it's just this week, I think. Yeah, this week, last week. But yeah, it was in the last 7 days this study came out. And the main thing about that is what they said was that the CS-rich microparticles account for a significant fraction of the deposit of CS. So, you know, the bottom line is the estimated CS dispersion, most of it was in microparticles.
And what does CS mean? What does CS mean?
Cesium 137 or 134. There's still 134 in it. So okay. That'll be around for another 20, 30 years. The cesium 137 will be around for 600 years. But these particles, they lie about and they can be lofted with a light breeze, you know? They can be taken up by fish and
right.
plants.
That's right.
And they can be eaten. So, you know, and there's been no studies that tie the King's College study, which is to do with toxic air pollution particles found in human brains, you know, connected to cars because it was London and everything, or nanoparticles, if you like. And then basically, you know, the fact that, and it's probably the same in Chernobyl as well, that these very tiny particles, which are radioactive, and cesium and uranium and all these other things have toxic effects as well as the radiation damage. You know, so it's a bit of a double whammy with
right.
the nicety.
That's right.
So that nobody's putting these two together. If they did, then they'd be saying, oh, cesium found in human brains. You know, there's a reason why the blood-brain barrier is there. It's to stop small particles, stop particles getting into the brain because the brain's so bloody sensitive. You know, but the study that they did on The Guardian or King's College London was that it was going to cause the pollution they found in the brains had links to Alzheimer's, which is a big problem, you know. And people blame aluminium toxicity as well. And that's probably because of aluminium, it gets worn and you probably get microparticles quite easily off aluminium. And aluminium has a high energy density and stuff. So, you know, they have linked aluminium with Alzheimer's before, but really it's to do with metals. And metals.
Yeah. It's heavy metal poisoning is essentially what's going. I mean, but this is, again, I'm talking about like the denial of it all. It's incomprehensible to me. For me, I don't think we need a lot more studies of how it harms people. What we need is science to be free of corporate control, to let science just go do its deal.
We need independent scientists who will actually critically.
Dr. Chris Busby did his own.
Like I've done, which is just tie two peer-reviewed papers together and say, oh, there could be a problem in Tokyo. Not Tokyo, but there could be certainly, well, there is probably is, but there could be a really big problem allowing crowds to go to somewhere like Fukushima and stir up all the dust and everything, nobody's measuring these microparticles. Well, obviously, these Japanese scientists just have, but nobody's put together the possible damage. And of course, when you're talking about forcing people to move back to those areas, especially in the Fukushima prefecture near the actual disaster site itself.
Within 10 miles. I think they're telling people to go back within 10 miles. I think it was the city's called Futaba, right? Right next to it.
Well, there was an article that's out today where they've got this guy, he's a Reuters reporter, and he's been there four times. He said the first time he was wrapped up, in gaffer tape and God knows what. on this occasion, only started wearing safety equipment when he got to such and such. Now, at the end of the day, it's, you couldn't trust the Japanese government and TEPCO to basically really sort of say, well, actually, maybe we should have a 10 or 20, 30, because, or widen that area, because they're only going by dose and they're only going by air dose. They're not going by what's in the soil and what you're kicking up. They're only going by air dose, which is the equivalent of feeling the heat off an electric fire. Okay, as opposed to kicking around little bits of hot particles, that's the difference. So if we're not going to sort of get people to put these, we do it on blogs. I've done it, but if we can't get scientists to put those two peer review papers together and say, well, look, those two mean that there's other health effects from radiation. And that's not really to kill the industry off, because the industry is a dead duck because of renewables. They're just so cheap and they're a much better idea because they're spread out evenly. There's less chance of them, like if a nuclear power plant closes down, you've got to switch on the coal or the gas, If you've got renewables, you can have such a huge amount of renewables that you've got more energy than you need, and that extra energy that's not being used in, because we've got, they had two demonstrations in China recently, they actually didn't open up, they didn't carry on, or didn't even bother
developing, so they may not be able to build their standard nuclear power plants, but they're still selling the SMRs. They're still selling nuclear power.
Now, that is the Ponzi scheme. That's the new Ponzi scheme.
This is really the scary one for me, that we really need to stop, is having them sell nuclear power in space and nuclear weapons in space. We cannot have nuclear. Nuclear is an intrinsic. Did you know that? In the United States Space Force, nuclear is an intrinsic part of it. They plan on having little nuclear power plants out there to charge up their stations.
Yeah, I mean, they're doing that anyway. They do plutonium batteries. That's what they use. But the thing with that is that the particular plutonium they need, they have to keep making fresh.
Right.
And because it's the only plutonium
That's why we have nuclear power plants, isn't it?
It's actually needed for other things, you know, in terms of research and development, and that's a bit of a waste off the actual resource, if you like. So there's a lot of, and the other thing about you know, Trump's Space Force is, you know, I can't remember the amount, but the amount per gram, you know, if you want to send a gram up into space, right, it costs something like, I'm going to throw a figure out here, but it was a quite ridiculous amount. It was something like $5 million per gram, you know, that kind of thing. So if you want to send a whole space soldier up, you know, if you want to send Captain Kirk up into space, that's going to cost, you know, $300 million or something, should we say. If you want to send
trillions,
you know,
are you kidding? Maybe two or three
if you want
trillion.
To send up the whole crowd of Star Trek, you know, up into space. You know, all the actors, you know, that's going to cost you $6,800 billion or something. And then if you actually want to send metal up there to build a spaceship, you know, I mean, you just don't have enough, you know, it would be even more than, you know, to get a spaceship, you know, with the soldiers.
To me,
instead of having $1.5 trillion a year going to the Pentagon, it would be $3 trillion a year and that's just for one. That's just for one little spaceship with guys driving around with their little guns and tasers and whatever else that they needed to deal with the nasty aliens or whatever they're going to do.
No, Sean, you know why they're going out there. The only reason they're going out there is they know the planet is toxic. And they are desperately seeking a way to get out of it without crawling into the ground and hiding for 200 or 300 years.
Every study that's been done so far on the effects of space on the human body and physiology. I mean, look at what happens. The first thing, say if you go to Mars, right? By the time you get to Mars, your body can't move. So when you land, you can't stand up. Right? And then, on top of that, it damages your eyes. Your eyes start to bulge and you start going blind.
Why?
So when you get there, you won't be able to walk and you won't be able to see where you're going if you do manage to be able to sort of drive. Right? So, you know, and that's only just the start of it. Then there's all the internal organs.
I don't think
we
planned on that one.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not going to happen. You couldn't even, I mean, the only possible thing I could see that would happen is human beings starting a base on the moon. It's quite a good idea. I'd be up for doing that. I think, you know, the whole world should chip in to do that. But I would probably guess that quite quickly, the people that would be going up to the moon would only be able to be there for a certain period of time, number one. Wouldn't be easy.
Why would
for them
people want to go to the moon? I would not want to go to the moon. I wouldn't want to go to the moon.
I'll be up for it, but
you would, not me. There is no
boring.
Way.
You know, you'd be a bit boring. But I mean, if you're a scientist or something, you could probably think, oh, we can grow ginormous cabbages on the moon or something. I'm not a scientist, so I'm not sure exactly what they would do up there. But the bottom line is, yeah, no, moon base alpha, sweet, go for it. And but, you know, I think it would be too expensive. It would cost trillions upon trillions to get the materials up there. As I said,
Sean,
you know,
we have about 5 minutes, Sean. Give you a heads up.
Have we had a complete go at a dead end?
We're recording. This is definitely going to go up on my podcast, and I'm probably not going to edit. I might edit a tiny bit, but not much. I want to ask you one last thing. Do you follow Dave Parrish on YouTube? That's, you know, P-A-R-R-I-S-H, Dave.
He does
Fuku Fridays every Friday, and a couple weeks ago he had maybe 2 weeks ago, on 3/11/11. They want to do like a mass meditation to think about a positive outcome for Fukushima and for all of this nuclear waste and all these hideous chemical and pollution problems, to just meditate on allowing the solution to present itself.
That's very white eagle lodge of you guys, I have to say. Have you looked up White Eagle Lodge?
No, but I really love the idea.
Arthur Doyle, guy who wrote Sherlock Holmes, is based in London, and they do color healing, and they all link up all over the world.
Oh, I know about color healing. Color healing actually works, to be honest. Oh, by the way, the name of that movie, is it called The Emerald Forest?
Emerald Forest, you got it. You got
what
it.
Did you say actually, this was very what of it? White Eagle?
Oh, the other thing was, yes, White Eagle Lodge. That was basically, it was formed with people like, who was it? It was, the guy who wrote Sherlock Holmes. A lot of people like that. And they basically, and a good friend
this
of mine.
That sounds pretty awesome.
Brother of that. You know, they did actually ask me, did I want to be a color healer? I said, no, I just want to kick some nuclear ass, basically.
This is what it says about White Eagle Lodge. This is the very first statement I see. White Eagle Lodge is a worldwide organization and teaches a universal spiritual path of brotherhood towards all life. I like that. Maybe that is very White Eagle Lodge of me.
Sorry, Kensington? Yeah, it's Kensington. They've got a lodge. They've got a building there where they do.
Oh, they're in Canada.
Yeah, they'll be there as well. And I can't talk about all their inner stuff, but I knew one of the inner brothers. He was a very good friend of mine. And we used to have really cool conversations
about it.
This
is in Texas. Montgomery, yeah. Texas. Is that right?
I don't, you know, they're all, as you say, they're all over the world, but they actually all...
Oh, you mean they're their own church? It's like a church?
Healing. Wait, huh?
Are you telling me that this is a church?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, it's a bit like a spiritualist church, to be honest with you, but they're not into talking to dead people and stuff. They do healing and, you know, being nice to people, which is not something I'm very good at.
That's funny. Okay, I have to understand. I want to get to this. Where's their address?
It's just off the nuclear industry.
Wow. This is interesting. No, I've never heard of this. Huh.
What, White Eagle Lodge?
Yeah.
Oh,
Hampshire.
Yeah, but they're based. They were actually started by a clairvoyant. Whose spiritual name is Minerva, I believe. And Arthur Conan Doyle, when he died, he came back to her, and he was explaining. There's a book called The Return of Arthur Conan Doyle. It's printed by White Eagle Lodge, and he was explaining what it's like when you die. So he's saying, "Oh man, it's really wacky up here and stuff." And he was talking to his wife and kids. And when I got kicked out of London, I went to this place in Devon. And I was talking to the farmer because I was living in a vehicle because I had a special branch and MI5 after me. So I was living in a vehicle with a handful of Sims posting on nuclear news. And I was talking to the farmer whose field I was parked up in. And I was talking to him about Arthur Conan Doyle, which just happened to come up. And he said, "Oh, do you know, he's supposed to be buried in such and such a place, but he's actually buried just round the corner here." That was bad. That was really crazy stuff.
Wow.
But small world.
Hey, Sean, hold on just one second, okay? I want to thank my audience for listening to us. This is Lonnie Clark with the Age of Fission radio show. If you're listening to us on KEPW, your show's going to end right here, but Sean and I are going to keep on going. You can hear the rest of the podcast on my Spreaker channel. Just look for the Age of Fission, and it'll take you right to it. Or you can go to my YouTube channel at Nuts for Art, NutzForArt, and it will post up there. So put your courage feet on, and we'll talk to you guys in Eugene next week. Thank you for joining the Age of Fission radio show with your host, Lonnie Clark. We'll be back next week to bring you more information about the nuclear industry and the harm it's causing our planet and humanity. Find all of our podcasts on Spreaker.com or on YouTube at Nuts for Art, NutzForArt. Thank you for being part of the solution.